Hi, everyone. Richard Nelson here with The Commonwealth Matters. Thank you so much for joining us. If you haven't heard, we are hosting a conference in Louisville on the topic of family and societal flourishing. That will be September the 16th. And the reason I mentioned that at the outset is because that is the impetus for this program. We are going to talk about the importance of family and the benefit it brings to not just individuals and children, but to society as well. So let's begin. Family is nearly a universal priority and important in nearly every nation. Now, that's according to a study from the European Values Study and the World Values Survey. A large majority of the people worldwide declare that family to be very important in their lives. In fact, it's above 80% in nearly every country across the globe. Now, according to a survey by Pew Forum in 2023, nearly three quarters of U.S. adults, that's 73%, rate spending time with family as one of the most important things to them personally. Now, that's regardless of how much time they actually devote to spending time to family. So, theory and practice sometimes don't match up. But 9 in 10 Americans in this survey say that they view it as one of the most important things, or as very important, but not the most important thing. So, bottom line is it's important to Americans here. So the question I'd like to pitch to you all is, we value families, at least we give it lip service, but do we understand how important families are for human flourishing? Do we understand how important families are to the spouses, male and female, and to children? Now, there was a really important article published a couple years ago by the Institute for Family Studies, and I'll put this out there. I'm leaning a lot on their research. The Institute for Family Studies is a top-notch research organization. In fact, we've had one of their guys, Lyman Stone, come and brief legislators in our office in Frankfurt. Good, credible, capable researchers, top-notch studies that they do. But they published They published an article last year that was entitled "The Family to Prison or College Pipeline: Married Fathers and Young Men's Transition to Adulthood," and this is Brad Wilcox, who's probably the most notable researcher at the Institute for Family Studies, and three of his colleagues participated in this. And I'm going to quote at length, but this is what they found. So a growing minority of young men are floundering. Failure to launch is a description that's all too common. Public intellectuals like Reeves, Scott Galloway, and Jonathan Haidt have blamed the falling fortunes of young men on shifts in our economy, schools that don't do a good job of serving our boys, or technology that distracts adolescent males from real life. But they have largely overlooked an even more fundamental factor in a boy's life, whether or not he grew up in an intact married home with his father. Now, I'm going to spare you some of the details and getting into the weeds of their study. But the bottom line here is that they make the case that it's the intellectual class, a very influential intellectual class, that has overlooked the importance of a young boy's family. They end with saying that the most striking finding is that young men from non-intact families are more likely to land in prison or jail than they are to graduate from college, whereas young men raised by their married fathers are significantly more likely to graduate from college than spend time in prison or jail. So, another question. Why did respected intellectuals overlook family dynamics in their study? Now, perhaps it was simply a blind spot. I want to be charitable and give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they just didn't look at that or consider it. But I think there may be something else that's going on. And I contend that one reason is that postmodernism emphasizes the individual over the family. And postmodernism would say that it's desires of individuals and their ability to self-actualize that takes precedence over marriage. Marriage is something that is sacrificial. It is self-giving. You're not going to necessarily self-actualize if you are getting up in the middle of the night to do feedings and changing dirty diapers. So another reason is that man-woman marriage is considered a relic of the past. It's a Judeo-Christian relic in particular. No longer do you need marriage to procreate. You just need biological donors and a willing technician in a lab. So those are two reasons I believe that family is not considered important as it once was. And I'm not going to dig too deeply into that, but those are my contentions there. So let's move over to this area. Let's look at what the research says about where children do best as far as the ideal family arrangement in order to grow up to be healthy and well-adjusted individuals. By the way, if you haven't been able to tell, I've already quoted research and I'm going to be digging into more research, but I will try to make it relevant and interesting here. So here's the next study I'm going to reference. It's a 2022 report from AEI, that's the American Enterprise Institute, and the Brookings Institute. They had a working group on childhood in the United States. Now, this is interesting because AEI is conservative, Brookings is left-leaning, but they both came together to study childhood in the United States. And I'm going to quote here. It's a little bit lengthy, but stick with me. They found that our working group agrees that the research evidence indicates that on average, children who have two parents who are committed to one another, have a stable home life, more economic resources, and the advantage of being intended or welcomed by their parents are more likely to flourish. In general, we believe that evidence suggests that marriage is the best path to the favorable outcomes highlighted above. They go on to say that marriage is, of course, not the only path that allows children to succeed. Many children raised by single parents and cohabiting parents thrive in life. Even so, in the United States, marriage continues to be the institution most likely to combine the four benefits outlined above for the sake of children. They say that marriage matters to children. To that, I say amen. They say that having married parents typically means that children live in families with more resources, including more time with their parents, and with greater stability. While these factors in themselves point to a range of improved outcomes for children, the benefits of growing up in a family with married parents is more than a sum of these parts. Yet a long, steady decline in marriage rates over the past five decades means that more children are growing up in single-parent families. Today, about one in four children ages 0 to 12 does not have married parents. I want you to stop and think about that for a moment. 40 years ago, back in the 1970s, that number was much smaller. I believe it's about doubled what it is. One out of four children today, 25%, do not have married parents. Many of those children, by the way, will never know their biological father. The study and the researchers here in this project, they say that compared to cohabitation, and this is an important thing to think about for a moment, compared to cohabitation, for instance, marriage in the U.S. is markedly more likely to bundle commitment, nonviolence, and stability. So what they're saying is that when you have a married mother and father committed to raising those children, the children are less likely to grow up in a safer, more secure environment. There's less likely to be violence. It's a more stable environment, as opposed to cohabitation, which cohabiting relationships do not last as long as married couples in their relationship. And the goal here is to provide stable, safe, healthy environments for children, incubators, if you will. This is something incubators are used to hatch out bird eggs. Now, the family home is more than just a nest, and children are much more precious than baby birds. But there's a similar idea. You need the factors and the conditions right for raising healthy children. And marriage is that significant factor that leads to healthy children. They go on to say this, that there are many reasons why children raised by married parents are more likely to flourish compared to children raised in single-parent families. For example, children in married parent families have access to higher levels of income and assets, more involvement by fathers, better physical and mental health among both parents, more family stability, and they say there are many other factors as well. So consider a few of the benefits to children who are in married two-parent families, mothers married to their fathers. They found that children are more likely to excel in school. If you have a safe home life, if you have supportive parents, your parents are going to, by the way, two are better than one. If you have two parents raising the kids, you got two individuals checking on their homework, making sure that the homework is done, making sure that the kids get to bed on time. It's just easier to parent when there are two involved instead of a single parent. And this is not a criticism, by the way, of single parents. For many single parents, they didn't have a choice in it, but they are doing the best that they can to raise that child. But married two-parent families are the ideal. And for children in those families, they are likely, more likely to excel in school. Family structure has impact on social and behavioral outcomes related to schooling. So kids in married, intact, two-parent families have fewer school suspensions, less contact from the school regarding a child's behavior, and then whether or not a child drops out of high school. Less likely to happen if there are married two-parent families. Children who live in homes with married parents are more likely to attend and graduate from college. Not a surprise there, because many married parents today have either one or both have some college education. Families enjoy markedly higher income and lower risks of poverty and material deprivation. I think part of this is because when you have two parents committed in a marriage, they're more likely to be of one mind, to work harder. They have the ability to work harder. They have the ability to cover for one another, to encourage each other on, whether it's to go back to school or maybe to take an extra job to help make ends meet. They're working as a unit. They're working together to provide a safe and financially stable situation for their children. So they are moving up the economic ladder, and this benefits children. Hi, Richard Nelson here with the Commonwealth Policy Center. Have you found yourself frustrated and angry about the direction of the country? Maybe you're watching Fox News and you see what's happening in Congress or in other parts of the country. Let me encourage you to turn your frustration and energy into a positive direction. Have you considered running for local office? And listen to me for a minute. You can have a greater impact on local elections and on policy decisions if you serve in local government. School board, for example, they set curriculum decisions and tax policy. How about city council or fiscal court? These are very important elected offices where you can have a positive impact on. Consider running for local office. CPC is bringing candidate training events all across the state, and we'd love for you to join. If you've ever felt called to run or interested in running, come on and join us. You can find out more information at the Commonwealth Policy website at commonwealthpolicycenter.org. Go ahead and check it out, and we hope to see you in the fall. Children under the age of 12 living in single-parent homes are much more likely to be in poverty than children in married parent families. Again, just a footnote here, what I'm sharing, these important points, these are all corroborated through various studies, sometimes multiple studies that have found what I am sharing with you. This study at AEI in Brookings found that the quality of life, of family life, is crucial for the well-being of children, and not just the structure and stability of their family lives, They said that children do better when they receive high levels of affection, attention, and consistent discipline from their parents. However, and by contrast, children exposed to authoritarian and abusive parenting or to high levels of conflict between their parents are more likely to suffer regardless of their family structure. So that's an interesting sub-point that hopefully it's a healthy marriage where husbands and wives are working together. They're on the same page when it comes to spending time with their children, when it comes to disciplining their children. Hopefully they're creating a safe environment for their children, because if they're not, then it doesn't work out so well for the kids. They have a lower performance in other areas. They did find this, that on the other hand, divorces involving children, when there are low levels of conflict, perhaps one parent is depressed, the parents have grown apart, or one of the parents has had an affair, they are more likely to make children worse off. And again, this is a continuation of the previous point, that if children are in unhealthy homes where the parents are not on the same page, where the couples are not loving and nurturing one another, it's not going to help the kids. So there's some good news and bad news. And they found that after decades of decline, the share of children today being raised by married parents has stabilized and recently increased slightly. So perhaps we've seen the bottom of the decline in marriage rates. So that's the good news. The bad news is that a large share of children do not have married parents, especially those from lower income backgrounds, and Black and Hispanic children. And this puts them at a disadvantage. And by the way, friends, this is something we should all care about. As citizens and as Christians, we should care about those who are struggling, those who are at a disadvantage, and we should encourage marriage formation. We should encourage fathers to take responsibility for their children. So there's some social pressure there. Let's talk about some policies that can foster a marriage culture. And there are many of them. I would argue that many policies have been put in place, particularly at the state and federal level, that have undermined a marriage culture and that have undermined family. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that towards the end of the program. But there have been well-intentioned policies to help single moms or to help children where the father is not needed, or the responsibility and burden of caring for those children are taken away from the father. So according to the Institute for Family Studies, they advocate to reduce marriage penalties in means-tested programs. Now, that's a lot of policy talk and whatnot. And means-tested programs are simply like Medicaid, the Earned Income Tax Credit. This is based on your income. And if you're below the poverty line or near the poverty line, then you're eligible for these programs. Another one is SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. It used to be called food stamps. What has happened is that low-income couples who are on any of those programs, again, Medicaid, the Earned Income Tax Credit, SNAP, if you have poor individuals who choose to marry, it's going to hurt them financially. They get some of these supports taken away from them for simply being married. And that was referring to a study done in 2005. According to that same study, they found that 70% of American working families with young children and incomes in the second and third income quintiles face marriage penalties related to Medicaid, cash welfare, or SNAP receipts. Now, those penalties, and they go on to say, they can reduce the odds that lower income couples will marry. One survey found that almost one-third of Americans ages 18 to 60 report that they personally know someone who has not married for fear of losing means-tested benefits. So here's a simple fix. If you want to encourage marriage formation, allow those benefits to stay in place and allow them to stair step up. Perhaps increase the income eligibility so that they can keep more of their resources saved while they're still on various government supports, instead of pulling the rug out from under them at the very beginning and saying, if you get married, you're going to lose all of these or a significant portion of these. If we really want to foster a culture of marriage, this is a simple thing that can be done. We tweak the means-tested programs, and we encourage marriage formation with those who are in the lower socioeconomic strata. Allow them to stair-step up. Now, Institute for Family Studies talks about Congress, and they talk about something being done there, and I guess that's where it needs to be done. I'm not a big fan of things being done at the federal level. I would argue, and what I've seen is that the more that the federal government's involved with, the more that it has its hands in, the less likely it will be a success when it comes to things that can be done at the local level and state level in particular. So anyways, IFS recommends that Congress minimizes the marriage penalties by increasing the thresholds for means-tested programs for married parent families, especially those with young children. They argue that the Congress should experiment with waivers that would allow state and local governments to try innovative approaches to reducing marriage penalties or passing secondary earner deductions for low to moderate income families. So IFS is interested in finding ways to help those who are single with children, not in a marriage, finding ways to encourage them to form a marriage and to remove the penalties and obstacles that would prevent them from getting marriage. There's an interesting thing here, though, something I came across in this lengthy study. And if you're still with me, by the way, thank you, because we're in the weeds with some topics and considerations that most of us don't spend much time on, but this is important. One of the sub-notes that the Institute for Family Studies points to is that simply having a better job and greater income are not a silver bullet for marriage formation. And they point to a study about those who were involved with fracking. It did not necessarily boost the share of children being raised by married parent families. So perhaps it's certain kinds of jobs, and which is a very good paying job, and that's typically a male-dominated field. But in that particular case, it was not leading to marriage formation for men in the fracking fields. At the same time, decent, stable, good-paying jobs, or decent-paying jobs, I should say, stable jobs, are a key ingredient for young adults considering marriage. Here's another element to fostering marriage culture. Young adults should be prepared before having children. Brookings Institute scholars, and again, interesting because the Brookings Institution is a left-leaning organization. Ron Haskins and Isabel Sawhill of Brookings came out with something called the Success Sequence several years ago. And this is where young adults are encouraged to pursue education, work, marriage, and parenthood in that order. Here in Kentucky, there's a legislator that is advocating teaching the Success Sequence in our public schools, where young children are discouraged from certain vices, bad activity, bad habits, and encouraged to pursue education, work, marriage, parenthood, again, in that order. And then the researchers at Brookings say that all aspects of society should encourage young adults to plan and to be mentally, financially, and relationally prepared for parenthood before starting a family. So there you go. Again, if you're still with me, thank you for hanging in there. As I mentioned at the beginning of the hour, one reason I'm doing this program is for my own selfish benefit, because we're bringing a conference to Louisville. It's called the Family and Societal Flourishing, and we're bringing in some top level national speakers to speak on this topic. And I thought I should really dig in personally and acquaint myself with more of what's at stake. One important thing is that families in this country, not only is marriage not forming, but the replacement levels, we're at about zero population growth for U.S.-born citizens. And that is a big cause of concern, because if we're not replacing ourselves, that will leave future older generations in a difficult position. I'm going to end with a, we've got just a couple minutes here, but I want to propose this, that at the heart of every political debate, there are three questions. These three questions are this: are people flourishing? Are they safe? And do they have jobs where they're able to provide for themselves and their loved ones? At the same time, not at the heart of every political debate is the question of the role of families in a flourishing society. I believe that too often the family is taken for granted by our political leaders, and the sociological implications of families are often overlooked. As I mentioned in the beginning of the program, I believe it's because postmodernism has demoted marriage and family formation from its primacy. You know what? A couple of thoughts. Parenthood is hard. Marriage is hard. When you put two individuals together in a marriage, you're not going to always agree. Sometimes there's friction. It can be difficult, but it can also be good to have a helpmate, to have somebody in your corner, to have somebody who's your advocate. Again, parenthood, it's hard. You're going to lose some sleep. You're going to take the kids to the ball games and dance practices. You have to endure the terrible twos and the temperamental adolescent years. Parenting is hard, but it's good. Both marriage and parenthood are good things for individuals, and they're good for society. And I hope that in today's program, we have begun the conversation, at least helped you to think through on the importance of marriage and family to our society. Perhaps there are legislators listening, and I'd be happy to talk with any of you further about this program. So we are out of time. Want to thank you all for tuning in to this edition of The Commonwealth Matters. May God bless you.